know that the department is experiencing a serious shortfall at the level. When we met with them about 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, on the 15th of September, we were dealing with the first quarter report. They were already projecting a 2.9 billion for shortfall. And so it's a serious issue that we really need to discuss. And we are also aware that they closed their financial year 18-19 years with an actual shortfall of about 2.8 billion pounds against the same item, compensation of the employees. So that's if they had not moved, if they had not shifted funds from other items, you know, like goods and services, they paying service providers within 30 days, and from the special defense accounts, they will experience difficulties in paying salaries. So they were then able to move funds to cross-subsidize that item, the compensation of employees. That has actually attracted them a negative finding from the audit point of view, and because raising the ceiling, the compensation of employees budget ceiling, and it's deemed irregular. So it's deemed irregular, so you attracted that finding irregular, irregular. Regular expenditure. So, so that's the problem. That's being one. And the second item is the funding for the defense review 2015. It was welcomed with a fanfare, and everybody looked at this as one diagnostic exercise. And that the department has ever conducted, major audit the department has ever conducted, that will assist the department in addressing decline. It was adopted in 2015, and with the hope that funding would be found to them, you know. To then fund the group. And but nothing has come out of it. And so, but you can't then say just leave it like that. And what you are exactly? And because the difference is managed to meet, and that defense review was mainly speaking to the mandate of the South African National Defense Force. So, as a country, we must then decide what we want to do with the situation that we is. We are aware that there is the economy has been doing well in the last few years. And the budget is set to experience serious pressure. And, so I'm saying these discussions are happening in that context. We are aware of the situation, but at the same time, there is a constitutional mandate that we have to fulfill. All right? And we must then decide what we want to do. All right? So I then leave that to the discussion that the colleagues we raise. So I've invited specifically to the particular But dealing with the before we I take the briefing by the DOD and the National Treasury, I think we should start with the apologies having done having made my master's coming to us. The first apology that I'm recording is that of the Minister of Defense, who called and said he is attending a meeting with the defense attachments coincides with our meeting today. So it's a meeting that she organized long time ago before she became aware of this meeting. So, but she then indicated that the deputy minister would be in the meeting and equal to the task. And that's the first apology. And then let me just look at the members if there are any apologies from the side before I go to the department. Any apologies, colleagues? Oh, there's an apology from Honorable J.J. Martin. And the apology from Honorable Departure. Both these two honorable members are attending another popular committee meeting. It's the Home Affairs committee. These two committees are sitting at the same time and they can't be in both meetings at the same time. So the apology is accepted from that note. Right. So that takes care of apologies from my side. And now I'm looking at you, Deputy Minister. You may want to say something with the apologies before I shift to the subject.
Chair and honourable members, thank you very much for giving us here today. Indeed, we are not full strength. The minister is not in attendance today because she is attending the biannual conference of defense attachés, which is started yesterday and only ends on Friday. So she asked us to tender her apology because of that. The department is here, Chair and Honorable Members, led by the Accounting Officer, the Secretary of Defense, who is also the Chief of Staff, and the CFO of the department. I am going to propose that I should straight away hand over to the Secretary of Defense to introduce this delegation and proceed with the presentation. I will come at the end with comments on areas where I think there may be a need to underline certain aspects of what we are going to be discussing about. Suffice to say that the resource shortage for our defense function is a very critical matter. The conversations that we have in forums like this and in parliamentary committees about this matter, they are beginning to echo at wrong places, unfortunately, to the detriment of the country politics. So we are talking about a matter which I personally do not like talking about because I think we have talked about it for too long and it is unavoidably beginning to have a very negative, you know, consequences. With that, I will ask the sector to come in.
Maybe before I recognize that, when you recognize, can you introduce yourself to Treasury so that when the Secretary does the honor, he then introduces the questions.
Yes, honorable member. My name is Alexander Nalera, from Public Finance, National Treasury. I'm with my colleague here who looks after this portfolio, Mr. Rashidu Bija.
All right, thank you so much. Thank you, Sanders.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, honorable members, for your comments. At this point in time, I will first start by introducing the delegation from the delegation from the Department of Defense. I will let them introduce themselves, starting on this side, and then I think we can one or two of the on the format on the other
side. Good morning, very much. My name is Dr. Kune Kirikabede. I'm the chief of the Pacific Air Academy in the Department of Defense.
Hello? Is it working?
Members, I'm Lieutenant General Busumu Zimasongo, the Chief of Staff of the SNJ. Chief of Staff of the SNJ.
Members, I'm Major General Chong Lai, Chief Director of Human Resource Strategic Direction for the First Lady.
Good morning, members. My name is Nangam Sotibilika. I'm the Chief Director of Budget Management.
Good morning, members. I'm Adam Abotsi, the Chief Director of Financial Services.
Good morning, members. I'm Brigadier General Bruce Mongo, Director of Procurement Management in the DOD.
Then hand over to the National Trade Association,
about the issues raised by Labour Chairperson, various legislative review, and the compensation of employees within the Defence Force. Like the third Gabriel indicated, we're discussing some of these issues and we're still struggling with some of them. The first part will mainly be on the defense review. I'm not going to go through the presentation outline because we'll cover all those issues as indicated there. Starting with the defense review 2015 overview. This is meant to provide a defense policy that is supportive of the government's priorities and strategic intent and to determine the force design and force structure as well as the future resource framework. It has got basically five milestones. Milestone one, to arrest the decline in critical capabilities. And milestone two, is to reorganize and rebalance the defense force as the foundation for future growth. And milestone three, is to create a sustainable defense force that can meet other defense commitments. And milestone four, is to enhance the defense force capacity to respond to emerging threats. And the last milestone is to defend the Republic against any threat. Coming to the broad strategic policy options, there were three options, of which I will only dwell on option two, which has been selected by Cabinet, which is to return the sovereign independence of the country, defense capability commensurate with continental expectations, and significant ability to reach and intervene over time, and continental governance and vital interests are secured. So that's the strategic policy option that has been decided upon. And again, coming now to the assumptions of the milestones. Starting with the first aspect, which touches on personnel. Under milestone one, it is envisaged that we're going to have 66,000 personnel, and then it grows to 189,000 personnel under milestone four. And the budget there is envisaged to grow from 43 billion to 88 billion rand. And again, in terms of the defense share as a percentage of GDP, it is envisaged that it will grow from 1.1% of GDP to 2.4% of GDP. And then in terms of the ratio regarding expenditure, it is envisaged that the ratio is going to be 40-30-30. 40 being personnel, 30 being operations, and 30 being the budget, the capital budget. And then, focusing on milestone one, which is the plan to arrest the decline. The Minister of Defense approved the department that milestone and directed that the interdepartmental task team must be formed. That's the task team which was formed between Treasury and Defense, looking at the funding options for the defense review. And again, looking at what will be feasible and executable over the MCF planning cycle period. The fiscal assumptions of the defense review 2015. Inflation was not factored in, and again the figures reflect the operational budget of the SNDS expanded over a period of 6 years, that in respect of the milestone one to be implemented within 6 years, and it follows an approach of significant ramp up of the budget allocation to allow for capacity building and industrial response, and the allocation of funds will be within the prioritization logic that has been followed and referred to as balanced evolution process determining the duty plan to address the decline. And now focusing on milestone one. Within milestone one we've got five white packages. The first two packages will happen within the baseline, whereas the last three require funding. With package number three, the amount is reflected there as 9.9, and then with package four is capital intervention for priority capabilities, which is 8.3 million. And the last West package there costing 35 billion. If we implemented in full, this milestone one, it would cost something like 53.3 billion over 6 years. And again, over the MTF, it would cost something like 18 billion. In your only focusing on milestone one, like I indicated in the initial slide, was about six milestones, five milestones. And within milestone one, we've got five packages. And those are the respective amounts indicated in there. In total, if we have implemented within 6 years, it's 53 billion. I think I've already indicated this slide. Let me come to some of the deliberations emanating from the work done by the task team. Given the constrained fiscal outlook, not all elements of the defense review can be funded as required. However, some non-cost interventions are being implemented by the department. The funding option under consideration for critical elements of the defense review is the retention of some departmental revenue. That's one of the proposals, one of which is UN reinvestment. The table that you see in there, it shows the UN reinvestment and the amount which was plowed back to the department through self-financing. I must indicate that as we deal with the issues of retention of revenue, we have to be creative in the sense that the constitution itself all the money due to the state is supposed to be deposited into the NRF. And again, the Section 11 of the KFMA, it copies from the constitution, and it says that all the money received by the national government must be paid to the NRF, except money received excluded by the KFMA or ANA or another act of parliament. So now, coming to the defense baseline, it rose from 50.5 billion in 1920, that's the current financial year, to 52.8 billion in 2022-23. I must indicate that the 2021-22-23 baseline, those are indicative baseline because the appropriation is for a year. So meaning that for 2021, things can change because that's an indicative allocation. Whereas the money which is appropriated for the current financial year is 50.5 billion. That is the allocation which is in the Appropriation Act of the current financial year. Now, focusing on the budget composition in terms of economic classification, which is mainly competent employees, goods and services, and payment for capital assets. The share of competent employees expenditure to social defense expenditure has grown from 39.3 in 2001-2002 to 55% in the current financial year. So if we marry that with the defense review, we find that the defense review, like I indicated, is 40-30-30. In this case, it's 55-25-17%. Competent employees continue to be the largest expenditure item over the 29 MTF spending. and is projected to be at around 57.1%. I must indicate that we once presented this slide in one of the conferences organized by Defense. I think it was on Defense Force Commission. It was interpreted as if we are saying that defense is highly paid. This is just a share of spending. It has nothing to do with defense force salaries. This is just a share of compensation to the rest of the spending item. I thought I need to indicate that. And again, given the current composition of the budget, it is unacceptable given the limited funds for other discretionary spending. Meaning that as the share of compensation continues growing, it means that it's counting out other spending items like payment for capital assets and goods and services. Here we are zooming into now spending on compensation of employees. The previous slide is the total budget, yet it's only compensation of employees. In 2016, MTF, given that the fiscal framework was not sustainable, and again as driven by the wage bill in the whole of government, then in 2016, a ceiling was introduced on compensation of employees, and budgets were cut for all government departments. In this case, in 2016, we had a reduction of 1.9 billion, in 2017-18, 2.9 billion as part of the aggregate expenditure. Those reductions have got a carry through effect, hence what we are seeing today. It is projected that over the 2020 MTF, we're going to have around about 3.2 billion shortfall on COD. Here is just a composition of a defense personnel in terms of the regular force and the reserve force. There's a slight decline in the reserve force number, but the pressure on COE still remains. And again, when it comes to, I must also highlight that a decision has been taken to keep the personnel strength at 75,000. And again, we also have a reserve force which is relatively constant. I think it's about 14,000 reserve force members. So meaning that the COE is driven mainly by what I've just presented here. This slide, it shows termination versus appointment, taking into account various termination types. It could be through disciplinary actions or resignation, dismissal, discharge, or retirement, or voluntary severance packages. The numbers in brackets is a net loss, meaning that the members who exited defense force are more than those who were brought in. We are presenting this slide because when the compensation of employees ceiling was set in 2016 across the whole of government, we were going to rely on termination types, which are in various forms. And in this case, you can see the table there at the bottom of the graph. We've got the various termination types. On average, in total, we have got something per annum, something like 3,000 personnel. And again, we also have an equivalent of, in the rest of public service, what we can refer to as an internship program. In this case, it's MSDS annual intake, which is on average around about 2000. Over the period 2013-14 to 2018-19. So now the current realities and challenges that we're grappling with. Overall, Chair, like you indicated, that we are in a physically constrained environment. And when it started, we thought maybe it's temporary and it's still with us today. And it forces us to reduce expenditure so that we manage our finances very well. Specifically within defense, like you indicated, we've got pressure on competence of employees, which must be personnel reduction must be balanced through a rejuvenation strategy. And then the third bullet, we also have the impact of long and open-ended peacekeeping missions on the budget. If not mistaken, I think this is for correct me here, I think we've been in the DRC since 1999. And I think Taye was spending something like a billion. We spent close to a billion. And in the MOU, there's an exit clause. Given all the current challenges and the priorities that we have and the trade-off that has to be made. It's something that perhaps needs to be considered. Increasing our commitment within a tight fiscal state. And again, the condition of service, given that one cannot be a soldier for life, perhaps it's time maybe to have some reform so that we can have an effective, young, energetic, agile force. And again, another challenge now is the realignment of the defense budget to achieve the 40-30-30 ratio that I presented. The 40 being personnel, 30 being operation, and then 30 being capital. And again, the defense review talks of defense being funding equated to 2% of GDP. And again, should it be funded on a certain percentage of GDP, or should it be funded based on the risk profile of the country, or both? And again, the issue of personnel or boots on the ground versus modernization. And again, in dealing with personnel-related challenges, what should be the career pathway for soldiers to ensure rejuvenation of the defense force? In conclusion, I think we're just echoing what we presented, especially on defense review. I think sometimes last year in November, we appeared before this committee specifically on the defense review to say, given the constrained fiscal environment, it is unaffordable. And again, one option that we have considered is the retention of revenue, one of which is the reinvestment, the UN reinvestment. And again, as a result of our engagement, and again, as part of our budget deliberation, one of the things that we pushed so hard was to also have a framework, an incentive framework to the rest of the government as a way of incentivizing departments to generate more revenue with an intention that perhaps they can keep some of the revenue, but being mindful of what the constitution says and the PFMA, that all the money is generated must be posted into the NRF. So we need some creative ways to deal with the issue of revenue retention. And again, what other challenge is that the adjustment of COE budget, so reprioritization from other different items. In our view, it's not sustainable. We just need to find a long-term a solution to deal with the challenges that we are facing. And part of the challenge to deal with the COE, we've been grappling with this issue, Chairperson, since 2016, at the time when the ceiling was set. And now it's no longer in our hands. Like I just indicated, this is work in progress, and now we're just waiting for the our principals, the political heads, Minister of Finance, Minister of Public Service and Administration, Minister of Defense, and the President, so that we can meet and discuss the two main challenges, compensation being one of the cost drivers. And again, in the role of the government, we have got an early retirement without penalization, and we're recommending that perhaps the defense force can participate in that. The process is still underway. And the last on the last bullet, what are the possible long-term reforms for effective and affordable defense force? I think this ends my presentation. Thanks very much. If there's anything else that I might have omitted, I'll give an opportunity to my colleague here, Mashuru, or anyone from the defense force. So I'm not sure as to whether the defense force were well represented in terms of the presentation. It's a true reflection of our deliberation. Thanks.
Yes, may I ask the defense team just to comment on this invite before I hand over to the minister, if the minister wanted to do a winding up comment. Thank you very much, Chair and honorable members. I think as the defense, in terms of the initial part of the presentation, yes, it captures what we essentially agree with. But in terms of the last part of the presentation, where it covers current realities and challenges and conclusions, that's purely the perspective of Treasury, which I would like to engage with. And of course, we've been having sessions with the Treasury where we're discussing these issues. Sometimes we don't find one another because they've got a duty to do as accountants, and we also have a duty to do as military personnel.
And I think that Shimokas has captured that part that I needed to capture, just to highlight to the members that the key focus performance areas for the Department of Defense, maybe we can summarize them up to about five. Number one, border safeguarding. Number two, maritime security. Number three, peacekeeping operations. Number four, disaster management. And as well as number five, support to the people as directed by the executive. So it's true that the, maybe National Treasury might say cut off peacekeeping operations. Maybe here we might, the President, I know that when he engaged with the department, said increase, prioritize support to the people, because that's very critical for the country as such. And also with the civil administration, of course, the main focus being the growing the economy. So anything to make the country safe for investment and to make our region safe for investment as well as for creating markets becomes a priority. But all we are saying is that that is really the prerogative and the domain of the legislature as highlighted, as well as the executive as already been indicated. When it comes to the percentage of GDP that we allocate to the Treasury of Defense, I think it's important to highlight that when the reason we say what percentage of the GDP gross domestic product goes to the defense, depending on what priority has the country or what kind of the defense force we want, is that it is when the economy is not doing well, of course, that GDP, even if it says 2%, it means the value of it will be reduced if the economy is doing well. But what percentage of what the country produces should go to the spend? And our view that it should be comparatively, it should be about 2%, and presently it's 0.98%. Namibia 4.4, Angola 3.5, Botswana 2.7, Lesotho 3%, Swaziland 2%, Zimbabwe 2.7, Ecuador, according, I was looking all over the map of Africa, there is no country in Africa that allocates less than 1% of its GDP to spend. None. So now that's the sense that I think from Parliament you are making, if you are allocating budget to say defense is not important to us, it's going to get less than 1%. But what are the implications? I think is what we need to be looking into. When it comes to the compensation of employees, I think the Secretary has indicated very clearly. He said 2016, the budget was reduced. So if we are now 55% of that budget goes to compensation of employees, I think 5 to 6 years ago, it was at 39%, which is almost where we wanted to be. But if you cut your denominator as it were, so definitely the percentage is going to increase. In other words, if your budget is 100 million, 40 million of it will be maybe your 40%, but if your budget comes down to 50 million, 40% of it will be almost 80% of the budget. Without having moved anybody from one area to another, it appears as if over the last 5 to 8 years, we've increased the number of personnel that you have got. No, anything has to have reduced from 79,000 to 74,000 where we are today. Despite the fact that the number of personnel that in the South African transport has been reduced, the percentage of compensation of employees has increased because the budget in 2016 of the federal spend has been reduced. I think that's one aspect that we wanted to make. Also, another high-risk area that we wanted to highlight to the legislature as members of the portfolio committee to look into as part of our oversight is that we say when we engage with the National Treasurer in 2017, because remember the first year of implementation of the scheduled in 2018. We said if for over a period of 6 years we wanted to arrest the decline, starting year one in 2018, it was going to be 53 billion rand over that period of 6 years, that is 2018 to 2024. But that did not happen. Instead, what has happened is that the decline has gone worse and worse and worse. So now we are in 2020, and we have not started to arrest the decline of the capabilities of the Department of Defense. So it means that what you would have cost us, 53 billion for 6 years, now is going to cost us even more. So by the time we come up and say, let's arrest the decline, give budget, if the year is 2020 by then, it's not going to cost 53 billion anymore over 6 years, definitely going to cost double that amount, up to 100 billion. So the longer we delay the arrest of the decline of the capability, the more we're going to pay when we decide to do something about defense. Thank you.
Chair, maybe I should not take the committee members' time for discussion. The issues are there, they've been laid bare. I propose that I should withhold my comments in order to allow the committee members to engage with the issues.
I can always, you know, make my comments, you know, after. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, colleagues. Yes, DM,
repeat the question. I'm sorry to interrupt. The chief of staff seems to be having something that he wanted to comment about before you cut it.
If you would indulge. Thank you, Honorable Chair and members. I didn't want to speak out of turn. I thought that the DM would speak first, then I come to the point I wanted to make. The first of those points is a decision on setting the ceiling to compensation of employees, which ceiling does not cover full expenditure in terms of paying personnel to the defense force. Maybe the strategy from Treasury is to ensure that to force our hand to actually do something about the reducing the money. But I need to explain that first and foremost, there's a misconception that we're not fully utilizing all the soldiers that are in the SNDF. And that confusion arises out of the requirement by, for instance, the United Nations that those soldiers that we actually deploy for United Nations missions must be what we term G1, that is, they must be comprehensively healthy. Otherwise, if they happen to die during operation and what will not be compensated as the department or the assembly. So those soldiers that cannot be deployed externally, are actually deployed internally on weather safe study. Some of them are used for guard duties and all. But what we should also understand is the fact that because of the challenges we are facing, our soldiers don't deploy normally like soldiers in any defense forces, you know, where soldiers say would deploy for 6 months, or for another 6 months they are given an opportunity to do their courses, and then following that they do training, preparing for the next deployment. We're brought into a situation where if soldiers are deploying for 6 months, maybe they may be offered the other 6 months, they are all in the next 6 months. And that is creating serious problems in terms of their families and the social problems. That's why even with our missions, external missions, we are having problems of the UN, you know, seeing our soldiers as being the highest in terms of sexual exploitation and abuse, and those are the issues we are trying to deal with. So I'm trying to say the must be understanding that for a Department of Defense, and I think there's also political sensitivity, that you cannot just cut personnel and throw them in the street in a situation where there are high levels of crime in the country. And therefore, we've been negotiating with the Treasury to try and say, let's have a humane kind of an exit system that will cushion the border so that then, you know, we can begin the process of rejuvenation. But in our engagement as well, one of the things that we have persistently pointed out is the fact that by exiting the old soldier and bringing in new ones, the number will stay the same. It does not mean the number will reduce.
because in terms of the order commitment that we have, those are the numbers that we require to be able to discharge what is required for, by government. I also wanted to comment on the issue of that they are raising up the retirement age of 60, even for junior officers. Of course, it's an abnormal situation. It's a product of the integration that we went through. And currently, as the SANDF, we are looking at a new service system that would have exit points at different levels, where if, for instance, you reach a certain age without promotion and what, and therefore you must be exited, but also you must have a pension. And this is what most professional defense forces follow. But what is currently obtaining in the defense force is a product of the integration process, but that situation of former forces and what is coming to an end, because now the majority of the members are those who joined after 1994, with whom we can actually begin to migrate to this new service system. The other point which is being raised by Treasury, and which I need to comment on and put it into perspective, the issue of boots on the ground versus smart modernization. Yes, ideally, this is what we should be striving towards. But it's something that cannot happen overnight. Because as we're speaking now, our capabilities have suffered serious deterioration to the extent that they pose a danger to our soldiers in terms of their operating ability. So to reach what is being proposed by Treasury, you first have to invest in modernizing your capabilities to the extent that you can then maybe somehow reduce the number of personnel that is involved. I need also just to expand on a point that the Secretary of Defense has already touched on. The issue of the ratio in terms of expenditure of personnel, operating, and capital. Treasury for the past few years, whenever there is the salary adjustment and all that which are negotiated at the Parliament Council, they will then say to us, you must fund those things internally without additional funding from them. And of course, payment of salaries is non-discretionary. We have to pay salaries. And if you then pay those salaries, then other areas of work like operations and capital will of necessity suffer. And you find therefore that there's this distortion in terms of the ideal military issue that you must strive for. Of course, Treasury is inviting us to buy into the ending retirement without penalization. But they are facing that in terms of exiting personnel without replacing them, so as to save costs. And for us, that cannot work. It's not something we'll be able to consume. That's why I should just make those comments. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Colleagues, the matter is on the table. But I don't know to what extent we'll engage in this discussion, given that we are told by the sector that the presentation represents the discussions that are still at the technical level, you know, that you know, they're yet to be escalated to the principals, who may actually hold a different view from that of the officials in the Department of Treasury. For example, and the presentation acknowledges that the department is facing serious spending pressures, and it also says, given the context of our economy that is not doing so well, and that we can't give them more money, we have even asked them not to surrender the revenue that they generate themselves. In other words, retain the revenue so that you can then start to fund spending pressures as well. That's what they're saying. And, and once they're telling us that, they're also showing us the indicative allocation for the future years that seems to be growing, but not at a level that takes into account inflation. You know, we saw that that thing in the MTF, and it's 2019-2020 is 50.5 billion. 2020-2021 is 52.5 billion. And then I don't know why it slides down in 2021-22 and then goes up in 2022-23. All right? But those are indicative figures that have not been confirmed yet, because from what you are telling us is that the budget is an annual. Is annually appropriated, all right? So now they're saying, once we post this, one appears to either maintain the budget at the level at which it is, but please don't attach too much weight on it, because wait until we give you what the allocation for the new year is going to be, and but I think we don't know that, but we hope that the situation would not deteriorate from the situation that it is. In other words, if the indicative allocation for 2021 is 52.5 billion rand, it would be a kick to the teeth if we wake up with an allocation that is below, you know, what appears to be an indicative allocation. But the issue that even as we look at it is not enough. And so I'm going to open up for discussion. I'm mindful that Deputy Minister, what is in the public is one thing, but what we know is more than what is in the public, because we have had a meeting with the army, and it was in private, and they told us what the situation is. What is out there is just the tip of an iceberg, all right? We've met the Navy, and they've told us what the situation is. What we, the public, knows is just the tip of an iceberg. We've also met with the Air Force. They've also told us things. They've taken us on a tour. They've given us a view of some of their aircraft, and we saw it for ourselves, and the situation is dire. So I'm saying, I'm just giving you comfort that what is in their chest is far more than what we meet the eye currently. But what I'm not too sure is whether what we know is what they've shared it with Treasury, because Treasury appears to be finance driven and not pushed by the dire situation that we have come to see for ourselves. You know, to a point where we even ask ourselves that really, in the face of porous borders, can we continue
finding the defenders and living at which it is. I mean, and we should be deploying 22 subunits, and we are deploying 15 companies, and we are deploying 15. Again, is the issue of personnel, which they can't increase because it's going to affect the city. The maritime borderline is also exposed, and the airline, what do you call it? The border there is also exposed. So these are the situations that we're talking about. Yes, we talk about territorial integrity. The question is, where is territorial integrity under the situation? So I think I should just say this to underscore the importance of us wanting to have this discussion with you. But I'm not too sure if this discussion will help, but I will let members to talk. I will start with Mr. Mare, who then I saw coming up first. And then, can I say again to my right? Right? And no hand at the moment, and then the hand on my left, Honorable Thabo Mutle. Thank you so much, Mr. Mare.
Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you to the National Treasury and to the Department of Defense. Again, it's a bleak picture, and the last two pages actually tell us and expose to us the problems. It clearly is not one government with one government view. It's one government with different departments with different views. They're certainly not talking one policy principle, one vision for government and for South Africa. Quite clearly, that's quite evident in terms of this. And Chairperson, I want to say that we actually need a day's workshop on this, and not just, you know, some presentation we could quickly go through, because we need to find solutions. My concern is, sir, on the last page, the conclusion. I can agree with all of that, but then I want to say, so what? Now what? Where's the solutions? Here's the problem, but where's the solutions? And that brings me back to right in the beginning where we have to start and say, okay, what is the mandate, and where does the mandate derive from? Some would say it is action driven, so others would say it's budget driven, others say it should be constitutionally driven. Where does the mandate come from? Who interprets that mandate, and who agrees on the criteria and the assumptions? Quite clearly, my interpretation is different maybe from the sector's interpretation. It's quite clearly different from National Treasury's interpretation. And if you can't speak out of one voice, out of one mouth, and that's now the Deputy Minister to you and the Executive, then we will not find a solution. Let's be honest about this. And hopefully you and the Minister will be able to brief us at some time to say, what is government's view on this? Because if that is government's view, why is National Treasury on a different page? It seems to me that the priority, and sectors have said that, this is not a priority of government, defense. Although I think the Chairperson alluded to the real issues. From the mandate, from the Constitution, you always have to take that proverbial step back and say, what does this tell us to do? Not ask us to do, but tell us to do. And quite clearly, there's a huge different interpretation of that. I want to start off with both the two departments, but certainly National Treasury, in terms of where is your interpretation of what is the mandate come from? And then, in terms of your problem that you have put there for us, what is the solution? It seems like you've got some insight that we don't have in terms of what the defense is, what we require. Now, you should share that with us. Because, you know, there's no point in giving us the problems, but you don't help us. Let me use one example. The exit system. We have asked many times that there will have to be, by National Treasury, an extra allocation for an exit system. I think you are quite knowledgeable to the fact that it cannot be funded from inside this budget. Because where will it come from? In terms of your last page conclusions, you have quite clearly said what is the situation. Now, where is it going to come from? Come from you. You will have to help us. I want to say, sir, if we replace, say, for instance, hypothetically, 55-year-old and more people with the same volume of rejuvenated youth, it will be a fraction of the cost. And through proper financing, we will recover that money within 2 years, probably. 2 financial years. Then we will be at a much lower level continuing going on. I don't see that from the National Treasury coming forward as a proposal. In fact, I remember from a discussion with the informal discussion with the Minister of Finance, there seems to be no appetite to provide an allocation for an exit system. Now, that appetite doesn't sit with National Treasury, please don't propose it. Because otherwise you're making your problem someone else's problem, and that we cannot do. The inflation, you have quite rightly said that projections do not include inflation. I want to say, sir, what have you done about this? Where have you proposed back and made suggestions back that the inflation must be included? You and I know that you're fooling yourself to work with figures with no inflation. And then also, I remember in the past, in the previous terms, there was submissions, but which was inflation included. Why this is not inflation included, I don't know. And that's quite funny to me. I remember, clearly remember, a discussion where I asked, what inflation do you use? And it was said, CPI. My reaction was, this is not a basket of food, it is military equipment. And it was agreed that that the military index is between 12% and 15%. Now, if you only include that, then you say it's no wonder we are in the situation where we are. Because you're running out of money that you don't want to admit that we don't have. Now, that is, for National Treasury, to me, that is shocking. That is shocking. Now, whether you have communicated that, I don't know. But you've certainly not communicated today to us. Now, that is a huge concern to me. I want to ask a question with regards to the UN reimbursements. Whether you have done a study on why we haven't received a higher reimbursement and what can be done to assist a higher reimbursement. Because quite clearly we see in the figures that you've given us, it's 1 year up, other year down, 1 year up, other year down, and then you project a constant growth into the future. Give us a reason why there was a difference, because my knowledge is the strength of our soldiers in the DRC was basically relatively constant over a number of years, over these years. So there must be reasons why there was a up and down. I know part of the reason from our visit last year to the DRC is because of poor logistical support from South Africa. And what is the reason that the Defence Force has given us for poor logistical support? Procurement, money, allocations, the fact that they cannot have stock of spare parts, of maintenance. Those are the things that is affecting it. Now, if you do a proper analysis and an investigation, a research, you will come up with those solutions, sir. And seeing that you are the first, you will have to be realistic about these things. Because for me, it is important, it gives the impression, like the chairperson has said, the Defence Force is not a priority of National Treasury. Now, how do you interpret the Constitution then? Then I want to ask, specifically also with regards to the threats that we've got, because you've indicated, and my assumption is, and I might be wrong, that you say our threat has changed, but which we know it is the fact. But what are the current threats? We have heard and we have read about ISIS cells that is forming in Mozambique and in our region. What do we need to do? Project Pakisa is a government project. It's a government using of the ocean economy. What are we doing to protect and support the ocean economy? Nothing. because we haven't got the capability to maritime patrols by aircraft or by Navy vessels. How do you suggest then that we will do that? I have I've dealt with the COP of cost of employment. My understanding is, and you can correct me, the defense force has got no control over increases of salaries. But you require from them to fund it out of their existing budget. How can that work? In no business does that work. In no institution does that work. That you give the burden of salary increases which they have got no control over, and you refuse government as agreed to the increases. Not the defense force, government, and you represent the person of government. Now, if you allow government to agree on salary increases, how can you not fund that? I mean, how does that work? Because it means that you just defeated what is next. I've dealt with the exit system and the exit mechanism, because, as I've said, a rejuvenation is important. But currently, there's no indication. So I'm going to stand back and yield back on that point, and maybe I can come in the next round. Maybe again, say something.
Thank you. Thank you. Honourable Muslim.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. I must start by saying probably it's quite unfortunate that Treasury has not taken this matter or this invite very seriously. I'm saying that from the perspective that decision makers from the Department of Treasury, they are not here. The only thing we will do is just to interact with the two gentlemen who will not take decision on whatever that might come out of this. Therefore, we need to note that and further take this engagement with the decision makers and appreciate their presentation because it gives light to what the issues are. But on the issue of compensation of employees, if I may ask, what is their perspective in terms of putting that particular ceiling? Are they suggesting that the defense should probably cut its personnel? What exactly are they suggesting so that we get the same understanding that they have that actually made them to arrive at that particular determination to put a ceiling? And how do they put that into context with the current situation that the country is facing of the high rate of unemployment? If they seek to reduce the personnel, what are they saying about that particular challenge that the country is facing? Are they saying the department must cut its boots and contribute towards this high rate of unemployment? Or what is it that they are doing to also assist the Department of Defense so that it is able to address that particular important challenge of unemployment, not excluding other the two out of the triple challenge that the country is facing? Because here they speak of a ratio of 40-30, and what is that ratio in relation to the realities that the defense is actually facing? Because in one of your slide 11, where you move from, I think it's 52 billion, and in 2021-22 you then move to 50, which is a reduction again, which must be explained, because if you are saying to us you agree that you will then be able to fund some aspect of the defense review 2015. Which aspects are those, and how do you then arrive at selecting or listing those that you think you will be able to afford, and which ones you will not be able to afford, and what are the basis for those particular decisions? Maybe we'll get an understanding, because the main issue is the impact that this reduction of funding is causing. And I think the SECDEF has made it very clear in terms of what other surrounding countries are doing in terms of the inflation, the percentage of the GDP that they actually follow in terms of ensuring that their defense budget is in line with those percentages. Some are even higher, and we are sitting at below 1% of the GDP. And somewhere in the slide you say the review has made a target, but in conclusion you then do not give a promising response to say this is how we are going to turn around the situation in terms of budgeting of the defense. But I understand you may not be able to do that. Hence I'm saying it needs decision makers, it needs a political will. I'm reminded of a situation that we come from recently, where we had serious challenges in terms of funding for education. Because there was a political will, that matter was, I can't say it was resolved completely, but because there was a will, then Treasury was instructed to make money available to address those particular challenges. Therefore, I repeat, even with matters, the challenges that the defense is facing, it needs a political will. The two gentlemen cannot help us, Chair. We need to convene decision makers and engage them and put some sense to them so that they understand what we have experienced as well when we did those particular visits to different components of the defense. Because seated where we are seated, we understand better now what are the challenges, which you may not understand because you are looking at distributing this fund equitably, efficiently, so that you cover everybody. But as much as we are preoccupied about growing the economy, how do we do that? Leaving the defense, because it's like going to a river to carry water with a bucket that has got holes. Because if our borders are porous, it contributes, it's actually detrimental to the economy that we envisage to grow. Now we need to move together, and when we want to advance issues of the economy, we need to ensure that our safety and security is well intact, because without doing that we will be running in cycles. So I think Chair, I will pause there. If they can clarify those few, I think we'll come back with a follow up if there's any. Thank you.
Thank you so much. I've recognized one, maybe more than one, and maybe let me ask the department to comment on these two comments before I move to the next thing. And I spoke about the maritime borderline and the land borderline and the airspace. In other words, if you are not in full control of the borderline, airspace, maritime, and the land borderline, you are not in control. If you are not in control, you can't be in control partially. It means you are not in control at all. So you saw your opportunity, but before you respond, can I ask you a question?
are you proposing a further cut in the MTF allocation? I can see the baseline. Are you proposing further cuts on the baseline of the department going forward? Maybe you answer that question before you move to the next comment.
In real terms.
Yeah. That was including the question. Yes. Yeah. All right, this is the thing, because all the discussions will be future. I mean, they are showing us the door of the paradise. We talk about how beautiful the paradise is, but the road we are taking is not taking us to the paradise.
It's
taking us somewhere. Yes.
I wanted to highlight that as far as the MTSF is concerned, MTF allocation, I'm sorry. The little thing that has issued, and I think it's been publicly made in terms of indicating how you're going to manage the cut, I think it was 5, 7, 6, and 7% over the next year. CFO,
can you go ahead?
Because they have already stipulated in terms of how they plan.
Real terms or long term?
No, just cut on the current baseline. They're not even taking into account inflation and any other thing.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chairperson. I just did a presenter for Mr. Fredo indicating that I need to clarify that indicative things. If you look, once they come up with a letter saying that in these years, those are the cuts that will be, they are preparing the department to say, by the time that year comes, remember that we'll be cutting so much. It's never been a point where they come up with those indicative figures and then the situation change. It's never been a point. Okay. If you look at the chapters in and the group, highlighted a very important point here. So say, why is going down in 2021 and 2022? There will be a cut of 5 billion in the budget. Now, that cut of 5 billion is affecting the operation. It's like that, was indicating that once you reduce the denominator, what will happen to the percentage of the compensation of employees? It will shoot. As we are seeing now, 55%. As we are seeing now, 55%. If I can draw the figures of today, definitely it will tell me that it's not so. It will be high. So that 5 billion is coming. Besides that 5 billion, 5%, 6%, 7%, also those cuts are coming up.
Over and above.
So we are saying the indicative allocations are showing a declining budget.
Yes.
But over and above that being put on as an indicative allocation, they are proposing further cuts.
Better cuts. That are keep on looming, keep on coming up. It won't be, one indicating that 5%. There is another provisional figures. I don't have with me here, which is about 1.4, 1 point something, for over and above that, which is indicative as well. You see, Jefferson, if you look, more especially Honorable Mare, if you're looking in terms of the budget of the defense, since 2012, 2018 financial year, there is something. We keep on going down. It never, I see when you look in terms of the graph or whatever, I like the term, say, in a real term. In a real term. Let's not play about the figures here. Let's talk about the real term. What has been happening? So, defense chairperson, the cuts that we are seeing, they were indicative.
let's not use it loosely, because it what you will be implement. So if in terms of championship, the other risk that I need to highlight to the members of the committee is a very huge risk from 2021 onwards, from that year, because the litigations that will come to the department is a huge litigation that it may come. Because remember, in terms of operation, you already signed the contracts with the suppliers who supply the department. If you cut that to 5 billion, you're not going to survive those suppliers. If you don't honor the contract, what litigation that will come is a huge litigation. Once that litigation comes, it means what will happen to the food that is wasteful. It's increasing because you will be paying those litigations something that you would have avoided. As that 2021 comes, one is having a Christmas night. That's what I needed to highlight, Chair.
Okay, let me do that. Can I change my mind? Let me take, there's one name. Is there any other name? There's only one name. So that when you reply, I don't see you giving us a later reply on this one, and taking into account that we're not meeting the participating in the country. But there are key things that you need to zoom in on. Amongst those key issues is the issue of sleep of sleeping. Maybe you can share that, and the issue of staffing and all that. Maybe let me take this side and then come back to you. All right? And Ms. Griggs?
Thank you, Chair. I think Honorable Modise assists me with one of the questions that I want to ask. But mine is just to know that on this document, is there I don't see time frame and the monitoring and coordination of this document. Because we are already now 4 years busy with this document, with this review. But I also want to say that I think the Chief of Staff, he knows exactly what will work and what the problem is. So why not make an in-depth, realistic and workable, I think, a presentation to us to assist you? Because I also see that one of the challenges, one of the, in the conclusion, one of the issues is that a high-level meeting to deal with compensation of employees. I think meetings, and whilst we know what the problem is, did that meeting take place, and what was the outcome of that meeting? Because, Chair, I really think that we are not taking this document very serious, and if you look at the situation and the new things that the CFO is now raising, then we are really sitting in a crisis, Chair. Thank you.
But, let me now ask you, colleagues, from Treasury to come. I will not expect department the DOD to comment, because I think I have a fuller discussion with them when we interact with their 20 for them. They have to come. And maybe they have to come.
Thank you, Chair. Sorry for that. There's just two things that I have thought during the presentation that have slipped my mind. The one is the effect of the lower budget and the absorption capacity and capability of the Defence Force of the production by the defence industry. Now, the defence industry has been, I think, a key role player in growing the economy, and especially on the export basis. My information is, if we cannot take the products from the defense industry, that reduces their ability and options to sell it abroad. Now, clearly you must have done an exercise to say that if this reduction is happening, it reduces the capability of the defense force to buy equipment and machinery and whatever we require,
but it will also reduce the potential of the defense industry in helping to grow the economy. Have you done that? What is the result? If you haven't done that, why not? Then the other thing that you have shown, which is quite indicative to me, that's the slide 4, where you refer to those three options. And I remember I have referred to those three options in the past, which, I mean, I must admit I haven't had received very, very helpful information. The first one, redesign to allocation. Now, have you done a costing exercise and a delivery exercise? So in other words, we must know if that is the one that we are going for, how much will it cost, so how much will it impact on what we have got the problem with budget, and how will it impact on our delivery to comply with the Constitution Section 200. Thank you very much.
Over to Treasury.
Chair and Honourable Members, I will try to do justice in all of the questions that you have raised. Let me start with the first one, Chair, that you have raised regarding the budget cut. In the guidelines that we have issued, indeed, there is a scenario, the 5%, 6%, and 7%. Is that a scenario? Not that at the end it's going to realize. Is that a scenario? But also just to highlight that there are projected revenue shortfalls, but the scenarios are just scenarios. I think let me end here regarding that point, because the Minister is going to present on the 30th, because at the moment it's still working in progress. But in the guidelines, there are scenarios, but those scenarios, they are not going to, they might materialize or not materialize. That scenario, that's for the purpose of planning for the budget. That's the first point that I thought I need to indicate. I think that's also to indicate that budgeting is about making choices. For example, I like this statement that I always make, that to budget is to choose. To budget is to choose. I mean, as a country, for example, if we compare ourselves with Angola and Zimbabwe when it comes to defense spending, in here we have chosen that we're going to build houses for free. We're going to provide for shelter. Okay? So I'm not sure as to whether in Angola they are building houses for free. It's a choice that we've made ourselves as a country. Okay? That's a the first, the second point that I need to highlight. Now coming to the specific question, starting with the ones raised by Honorable Madre. We don't question the existence of the defense force. We don't question the existence of the defense force. It's there in the Constitution, the defense force. So, and again, the mandate of the defense force is known better by the defense force. So, given the constraint with the budget allocated, we're not restrictive in terms of the mandate. They know better the mandate. Ours is just to make sure that we allocate the budget and then they implement the mandate within the allocated budget. Yes, we would want to have 22 companies in all the borders, to increase them from 15 to 22. But the reality is we cannot spend the money that we don't have. That's the reality. We cannot spend the money that we do not have. So that's another point that I think I need to raise. Because we've got the fiscal framework that shows the revenue. And again, we also have the expenditure and also the borrowing cost. So we need to work within that fiscal framework. And I think I also need to highlight that we shouldn't portray a picture that defense force is the one that is facing this constraint or the challenges of budget cuts. Budgets were cut across government departments, right across. If you call the police, they're going to be telling you the same, that we can't deal with the protest because we don't have enough public order police, for example. So it's not the defense force alone. But we are working within the fiscal constraint environment that has been allow us to fund everything that we need to do as a country. And again, regarding the issue of the mandate and the priorities. For example, at the end of each term of each administration, we've got the Department of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation. They compile the medium-term strategic framework that outlines the priorities for 5 years. So we are guided by those priorities. So even in our deliberation, we've got checks and balances. We've got DPME, Planning and Monitoring Evaluation, DPSA, COFTA, and others. That to make sure that we fund the priorities of government as allowed, as included in the medium-term strategic framework. And again, with regard to the extra allocation for the exit system, like I indicated in my presentation, that we've been dealing with this matter since 2016, where ceilings were set across government departments. Mainly because we realize that our wage bill is not sustainable. Mainly because of the composition that constitutes the composition of employees in government. Hence the ceiling, because this compensation is the biggest expenditure item, and it was crowding out other expenditure items like goods and services. Meaning that one day we're going to find ourselves going to work without a pen, for example. Meaning that salaries, maybe in one of the days, are going to take 90 to 95%. So that's purely consumption, and yet we need to grow the economy. So when we had the discussion with a big department, because the mechanism that we were relying on, it was that voluntary mechanism. It was not retrenchment, it was that voluntary mechanism. Some of them were highlighted in the presentation, like the natural attrition, resignations, and stuff like that. To say, now that we no longer have the luxury of being at full capacity, we need to balance the intake versus the natural attrition, because we were trying to arrest this COE which was getting out of hand. And again, I'm going to link it with the question that you have raised, Honorable Mare. Public service and administrations, they are the ones who negotiate on behalf of government. So, turns out that most of the time, maybe the government is the loser, they don't get what they want from the union, so, and it's for the government at the end to implement. And again, when we have to implement, given the constraints, the fiscal framework doesn't allow, or we are so constrained that we can't even now pay or honor that argument. And the department themselves, they have to make sure that they reprioritize, because it's unaffordable. That's the reality. It's unaffordable. So, but the point is, it's not necessarily that sort of list or in the forefront of the negotiation. It's the Department of Public Service and Administration. And again, the issue of adapting the budget to make sure that we cater for all the industries. It could be a military index, it could be a medical index, it could be or any other. And yet we are adapting using the CPI. We also debate those issues. And if we have to go by that, for example, education, it increases by something like between 10 and 15%. So, and if we have taken a choice that free education is a priority and it was implemented through budget reprioritization, meaning that education was going to consume everything. So we try to find the middle ground when we adapt budget. Yes, it's not an optimal mechanism, but it's a middle ground. Because if we have to say we adapt for this medical by 15%, education by 20%, and you'll find that other spending items are going to suffer big time and won't be able to even have a budget for those.
Review allocation exit. Okay, and again, when we started in 2016 with the issue of the exit, we had an engagement with the defense one to say, for example, let's have scenarios. If you have to go small in terms of exit, how much will you be able to afford, and how much will you pass on the fiscal? And if you have to go big, just cost it, how much will you be able to afford, and how much will you need from the fiscal? So unfortunately, we didn't get those scenarios. So what we are still waiting for at the moment is also a rejuvenation strategy, as I said, between the two ministers, that it's going to be presented, so that we're going to have a basis to begin to discuss some of these issues. Because at the moment, we don't have much information to begin to discuss, especially when it comes to the COE, like one of which is the rejuvenation strategy. So we will be talking, I guess, maybe to the issue of retiring at the age of 60, maybe the issues of at what point will the soldiers exit. I think that's the strategy that we still have to engage on.
Theory of why not fund them? Did they okay have a chance on this one? The question from honorable member there.
Honorable
Mutu. The issue of us not taking, we do not take this seriously. We take this issue seriously. We have engaged at different levels. And again, on the issue of COE, what is our perspective? Should they cut on personnel, high rate of unemployment? I think I will link this with the point I raised earlier to say it is not affordable and again sustainable. Yes, we would want the unemployment rate brought down from 29% to zero, but we are physically concerned, like I indicated. I must also indicate that from our side, we are not so much related to the number to say they must have X numbers. For example, if you check at the slide that I presented on the defense review, it says they will start at 66,000, okay? And right now we're at 75,000. From our side, we're not so much fixated into numbers because there are different ways to do it. Given the budget, you can find different ways to work within the budget, to work within that budget, and have even maybe more than, way more than those numbers.
Defense baseline. What are the defense review to be funded?
I think, honorable member, you are linking it with, for example, the UN reinvestment. So from our side, we're just indicating to the department that with UN reinvestment, ring-fence it to fund those aspects that fall within the milestone one, arresting the decline. We're not restricted to say fund that. The freedom is to the defense force as long as they are addressing the defense review. From the list, the whole lot of things that I've seen, I think General Gibbs can also indicate some of the things, but we're not being prescriptive. As long as it talks the defense review and arresting the decline, without necessarily saying buy this, don't buy this, buy that, don't buy that.
Convene decision makers. I think let me also jump back the memory to the last meeting that we had when we presented the defense review last year, November, I think I'm right. And one of the suggestions that we welcome from the committee was even going to engage the president. So we welcome that suggestion by the committee to also engage the president. And then,
so we are a new committee of the sixth parliament. But I'm sure you're referring to the committee of the fifth parliament.
Yes, the previous one. Honorable Mare was there. Monitoring, making workable documents. I think that one is for defense. My colleague, I'm not sure if one has got anything else.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I think I will just address a few things. Generally, my colleague has already addressed this issue. Honorable Moses, I think you've repeated this issue quite several times to say, are we wasting our time here? Do we have people who can take this matter seriously? I think I want to assure you that personally, from where I'm sitting myself, I deal with the issues of defense on a daily basis. I generally refer myself to as a shop steward of the Department of Defense within National Treasury in most instances. So issues of defense preoccupies what we do within the National Treasury. As my colleague has said, to budget is to choose. Generally, when you deal with this matter of budget separately, we've got how many departments in general? Around 46 departments in the whole of government. And when you consider the budget of Department X separately, all the issues that are generally raised, they make quite a lot of sense. But the difficulty comes when you are sitting at the center as treasury and you have to balance all these competing priorities. We are not making the point that defense force is not important, it's extremely important. My colleague has already touched about the issue of numbers, Honorable Marine. You raised the issue of what are the solutions. I think from where we are sitting, our interest as National Treasury is to have a defense force which is affordable given the current fiscal constraints. Honorable Chairperson, you also wanted a commitment from this delegation, from our side, whether going forward there will be no budget cuts. And I listen attentively time and time again. And it sort of rattles me a little bit. Because from where we are sitting, working with numbers, not only for defense, but for the whole of government, I just don't want to take the thunder for my own honorable minister when you will be presenting the MCDPS budget in a few weeks to come. But just to suffice to say to this committee, the economic environment out there remains extremely constrained and we hope to get out of it, but it really is constrained. But I don't want to dwell much on that. I would also, in general, Chairperson, we don't want this committee to reduce the problems within the defense force or the challenges that the Department of Defense is facing to only the issue of funding. Yes, funding is a big, big issue within the defense force, but I would want this committee, when coming up with some suggestions to the budgetary review and recommendations for us to take forward, to also interrogate other matters that the department itself could have done better or can still do better going forward to address some of the challenges. Honorable Murray, on the issue of UN reinvestment, you asked the question, why are the revenue forecasts sometimes going deeply in and out? You would have seen in one of our slides, we, over the past few years, and this is because of the work of the fifth parliament, this committee, this portfolio committee did make a recommendation that the Department of Defense should retain revenue from UN reinvestment. And part of our self-financing arrangement, when we, as National Treasury, approved those retention of revenue, was that the department should go out there and improve its equipment, yes, the visibility of its equipment in those deployment areas. And that has always been one part of the condition for approving the retention of revenue. But I think perhaps the Secretary for Defense or the CFO can also come in there and elaborate further. Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson.
All right. Thank you so much, Treasury. Don't think we can take these discussions any further. and I think it's I think the Deputy Minister wants to say something. Yeah, you want to say before we, all right, so you may continue.
Thank you, Chair, I won't be long. Just to indicate that, remember in the past, I think in the debate that led to the promulgation of the Money Bill and later Money Bill Amendment Procedure Related Matters Act, it was as a result of Parliament saying that they don't have a legal instrument to amend the budget as presented.
Don't go there. I'm not inviting you to go there at this stage.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And there was a question, a very direct question from the department on the ceiling. You have not commented on the ceiling. And it's very critical, the ceiling on the compensation of employees, because that actually attracted the department to the department and adverse opinion from the AG. Said even though they can reprioritize their budget to cross-subsidize the COE, and they are told that, look, you have exceeded your bounds, and therefore what you have done is an irregular expenditure, and then I can foresee this coming. It happened, it's going to happen, and it's clear that it's going to continue coming up until we understand from you, having had this discussion, why insisting on the ceiling? We're not saying the ceiling must not be there. Why insisting on the ceiling at the level at which it is, much against the advice that you are getting from the colleagues who deal with staffing matters on a day-to-day basis? I think that was the question, and it was very direct.
Thanks, Chair. On the issue of the ceiling. I think what we're trying to find through this high-level meeting is to find a sustainable solution to the problem that we have. Because the ceiling, I think in 2017, 2018, it was increased, but it's not sustainable. Like I indicated, it's crowding out other spending items. Such that at the end, like I indicated, the tools of trade, we're going to have people without the tools of trade. For us, it's just to find a sustainable solution to the problem.
No. It must be sustainable for the department as well. The question is, what made you to place it at the level at which it is? What informs you to say this is the ceiling? We're not questioning placing of the ceiling. But if you are placing the ceiling at a level that is not commensurate with what is already obtaining, and you're actually putting the department in a serious crisis. That's what the question is. Why you place it at the level at which it is? Is it historical? Is it your counter figures? I mean, you are placing a ceiling and then you say if you raise it, and you are breaching the instruction, and therefore it's going to be an irregular expense. I think that was the question.
Also given the fact that they don't bargain on wages and salaries,
yes,
as you rightfully said, so you put the ceiling, they have no say in that, they have to somehow make it work, but they still 74,000 somewhat staff members, and then because of that negotiation, it raises above the ceiling, and there is irregular expenditure.
I think also to put it differently, that's the way it's doing. We are now in October. The financial year ends in March. Where the ceiling has been put means that between now and March we must retrench 5,000. Now 6,500 to remain within the ceiling. So if those who are putting the ceiling, why isn't that also their duty then to come in and say, we are coming in, we are retrenching 6,500, take the letter, so many
here are the names, people, they are retrenched, from now onward, you are going to be within the city. Because I don't have those powers.
All right. Just comment briefly and then we close. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Just remember those two questions of mine that you haven't answered.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Your direct question on the ceiling. The ceiling is historical. Budget ceiling was introduced in the 2016 medium-term expenditure framework budget for all departments. So for defense, as we've indicated in the presentation, it was 1.9 billion rand reduction in 2017-18, 2.9 billion rand reduction in 2018-19 last year, which it has now caused the problem with the Auditor General, the finding of irregular expenditure. Historically, over the previous 2 years, as my colleague has indicated, the department during the year, the ceiling, after it was set, it was readjusted through variance during the year, which means the department came to the treasury and required some shifting of funds from other spending items to augment the compensation budget for 2 years. So, but at some point, as treasury, we realized that this issue requires a long-term solution that is referring to, that you can't keep on every year taking budget from other spending items to compensation, and hence you are seeing this, what I can call it, a crisis. When the ceiling was introduced historically, it was based on the aggregate expenditure ceiling of the whole of government expenditure, and hence this cut. Unfortunately, this cut, as he has indicated in the presentation, a cut in compensation of employees have got carousel effect, meaning that if the department, after the introduction of that ceiling, didn't do certain things to try and stay within the ceiling, then this is where the department finds itself in. Yeah.
I think it we hear you, thank you. Please essentially that.
Yeah.
Please essentially that. And when is no, I was closing the discussion. We can see we're not. You have not been able to find it out. And I think it was pointed out, was it by the inspector? I can't remember, or the chief of staff. And it's clear that you would not satisfy us. All right. And we'll make our own findings and report to Parliament. And but rest assured that the scenarios that have been proposed, they are uninformed. And I'm short of saying, I'm not saying it. And let me not say it. Let me say it. And then let me be right at 30 minutes. You wanted to say something before we close this meeting?
Yes.
And thank you so much. Some of you too. I mean, you didn't say anything.
No, thank you very much, Chair, and again, honorable members, for the opportunity to comment on the challenges in government we are discussing. We belong to one executive as the Department of Defense and the Treasury. What the Treasury has set itself as its mission is what we all as government departments are in support of, and my ministry is also part of those decisions. Deliberately did not want to be saying much in this discussion because the answer to some of the questions are really difficult answers to consider effecting. They're very difficult answers. However, having said that, I take note that processes wise, there is still, you know, a possibility that within the executive, some accommodation to release the pressure on the defense function can still be arrived at. The point that was raised by Honorable Member Mare earlier on, I think, was a valid one, because I also got a feeling that we sounded at a political level not to be coherent, sitting here as the two departments, with respect to where do we derive our policy mandates from. Because to approach this matter in any other way, which is the matter of the underfunding of the defense function, it is an unconstitutional dereliction of duty on the part of us all. It is there in the constitution, and it is a detail which I know that those who have been in this committee before have always found it a bit uneasy, because the constitution says the South African Defence Force will be maintained as a modern, professional, disciplined defence force. Those adjectives are used in the constitution, and by modern, implicitly pointing to the desire by our country to have a defense force that whose strength is not drawn from the numbers of people, citizens who are drawn into the organization, but that the utilization of modern technologies of war in order for the country to be effectively or efficiently defended. It's in the constitution. The situation we now have where we're talking almost 56% of our budget, when you look at the ratios, we're at 55.9% spending on compensation of employees, and the rest, it's operations and capital, and very little for capital, by the way, because of these cuts that were effected on the defense budget. The defense department could not do what the sector is saying, could not retrench people in the numbers that we are talking about. They could not do that. But what that meant is that they had to get money somewhere to keep paying salaries at the end of the month. And that has led to a situation where, in a very irresponsible way, the greater resources of the defense function are going to salaries. Somewhere in one of the presentations, they were actually been talking 59% of that ratio going to compensation. And that has happened because there's been a raising of the special defense account, which is money that is intended for capital, you know, projects. So the long-term effect of it is that we are already there, a situation where we are going to find a defense force that is almost in its profile, looking like it's a people's militia. You know, armed with the guns that were used very many years ago, you know, German Mauser. Or maybe, you know, if I may exaggerate the point, you'll have a defense force of people who are armed with Knopfkiri. That's what would happen if we continue on this trajectory. So, What I'm saying is we do need a discussion, as Honorable Marais is saying, with the colleagues in Treasury, and of course the Mincom Fund must also come in to, you know, assist Cabinet to look at this very dangerous, you know, situation that is developing. We have only 24% of our troops, as we speak, that we can deploy at any given time. Only 24% of our troops are deployed. And of that deployment, 50% of the Defense Force activities is by the reserve force. It was never the intention when the force, I mean the reform. You see, at the end of this document, the presentation in conclusion, it says there that we must possibly look at long-term reforms for effective and affordable defense force. For effective and affordable defense, we have done that. That was the defense review that once embarked upon in 1994 with the dawn of our democracy. That defense review, it reformed the defense establishment and said we must cut down the force level, we must stipulate the numbers, we have about 75,000 regular force and the rest must be the reserves, and they brought in the one force concept with the view, obviously, of reducing the spending on the of the country on defense. Those are the reforms. There are no other reforms that you can come up with. There are no other reforms. You can come up with now cost-saving measures, but you can't come up with reforming our security establishment, our defense establishment. We reformed it in 1994. And you said we'll have a one-force concept wherein we'll maintain the elements at the basic level of every component and capability that the defense force must have, with a view that should there be a state of national mobilization, we should be able to get the reserves to prop up the numbers. But the different capabilities and the different components of this defense force must at all times be humming and be healthy. That was the reform that we can't do anything more to save costs on our defense function. So, I agree that we need to have, you know, not just, you know, looking at the figures, you know, a discussion that can kind of bring or improve coherence in politically in dealing with this matter. Having said that, let me make this other point that the issue about at what level do we spend our resources on our defense function? You know, we have had this discussion in many meetings before. There's always been an appreciation that you know, there's a rule of thumb. You can't grow an economy that you cannot protect. You can't keep on, you know, spending money, we are developing this industry and that industry, and you say we are the leading economy on the continent and not have the capability of defending that. Every economy, as it grows, the rule of thumb, at least 2% of that GDP must be spent on, it's an insurance, they're going to take out an insurance on your economy. So, my point is, some of these discussions we probably need, this organizational memory that we must refresh, we must bring back all those discussions again, so that, you know, we can see things the same. Politically, let me just make the last point. Politically, here is the issue. You see, we talk about spending money informed by the, our country's profile today, profile in relation to being a peaceful country, not at the war and quarreling with anybody, that we must look at the current realities when we look at what, how much we want to spend on defense. It doesn't work that way. It doesn't work that way. When we take insurance, we don't take insurance for the situation we are in today. We're taking insurance for the situation you don't know, the future you don't not know. And in the nature of things, defense spending, it is equipping military organizations, it's such a costly exercise that you never have money as a country to spend in the event of a conflict that arises suddenly. You won't have the money to buy all of the equipment that you need. It's not possible. And that is why continuously you need to keep on spending, you know, a reasonable amount on equipping your own military organization. But not only that, there is also the question of the timeline to take, the turnaround time to get military equipment. From the point when there is, you know, a requirement established by those who are in charge of the force to a point when it is delivered, we are talking about an 8-year turnaround time. So what I'm saying is, all of these issues, we need to be of the same mind around them. To not go beyond that, because otherwise, you see, they will do things that people will laugh at us. And people will laugh at us. You know, we can't reinvent the wheel when it comes to just how countries and governments are run. We can't be the third country where people don't just care about the defense, having a reasonably competent defense force, and expect what to happen. Politically, actually, if we are to really be serious about this, the political system we have as South Africans set out to build democracy, the way we South Africans are inspired to have in our own country, not just democracy because we've got parliament, but democracy with all of the institutions that the Chapter 9 institutions and all of you. It is a practice that you do not find everywhere in the world. And if we take our, what we've built, the system that of democracy that we've built, serious, and we are careless about it, of course it has to be protected. And it's not the whole world that is happy with this system. So, why would you actually venture in a direction politically where not the whole world is actually moving into and not protected? Because it means that we are actually among politically one of the most vulnerable countries in the world. I'm just saying, you know, these things, they have to be, you know, looked into. It's not just a question of figures in front of us. Indeed, there is a bigger question that we must address. Thank you very much.
I think thanks again, and I'm happy that we're on the same page. And Treasury, please go have a look at the figures, and then present something that the country will be excited about when you do your present your budget. And whenever you do it, and the situation currently is at all not satisfactory, and we're not meeting the demands of the constitution, and we have an army that is a military that is regressing, and very soon it will defend this country with the shield, the spear, and the knobkerrie. And anyway, we won wars with the shield and then skin, with the what was shield, skin, and the skin. So we won wars, and I know not to do it bad, but we don't want to get back to that period. All right, so we want a modernized
army that is able to live up to its mandate, and that has accepted you know, its obligations in terms of our MOU with the United Nations and the African Union. Currently we are top when it comes to peacekeeping missions. And currently we have the army deployed in the Western Cape to help government deal with the issues of crime and of criminality in the Western Cape. And we want to maintain the army, the military, at a level that the country must be proud of. And with that, we close the meeting. And no, we're not closing the meeting. And we've eaten into the time of the presentation. But in other words, the presentation will be dealing with the budget, a historical fact, but also looking forward. But there again, unless we get the benefit of where financially we are going, that discussion would not have meant anything to the meeting today. But at least now we can see where we are. I'm sure with the presentation we'll be understanding where the department is coming from. With that, we excuse you, and if you have to leave, you are not forced to stay behind the meeting. But we'll now move to the second presentation. The second presentation is on the... let's take a comfort break. I don't know, 5 minutes comfort break to allow the department to put up the other presentation. What's the time now? Can we come back at that part? It's 20 past. Right? 10 minutes, yes. Yeah. Thank you so much.